Welcome to E-commerce with Coffee, a podcast powered by Amber Engine, where we share e-com secrets for brands over your favorite brew. We start with the caffeine and then leap enthusiastically into behind-the-scenes e-com insights that led to the success of our guests. I'm Nate Svoboda, and I'm about to serve you up the best. Let's get started. Good morning and welcome to another episode of E-commerce with Coffee. I am particularly excited about our guest today. I'm going to be speaking with Stephanie Bregman. She's the CMO of Manly Bands, which I'm actually going to be using pretty soon. It's this really interesting D2C wedding band brand that, you know, offers a lot of unique and customizable options. You know, Stephanie, well, really happy to have you. Would love if you could tell us a little bit about the company and your experience.
Yeah, sure. So the company's been around for 5 years now. It was started by our co-CEOs, John and Michelle, who are also, of course, husband and wife. And when John was going to get his wedding band, he had a really hard time finding something that would fit him or something that he actually liked. And so his experience was so bad at the jewelry store, he realized, like, there's got to be something better. I don't want a plain option, and I don't want to pay thousands of dollars for something that I don't like that I'm going to wear, hopefully, the rest of my life. And so that's kind of how Manly Bands was born. And both our co-CEOs are very creative people. They saw the need for, like, just different unique materials and not only presenting really awesome product, but providing a great customer service experience for our customers, as well as having the technology to showcase our products in a great way from the time they see our ads, seeing our product on site, getting the product to their door. We want to make sure that experience was great throughout the whole process, because there's so much for us as women to kind of go to a store and see a million options. We wanted to give guys that option too.
So before we dive into the meat of the content today, you know, you've been there for, correct me if I'm wrong, about 2.5-ish years, going on three?
Going on 3 years. Yep.
What are some of your favorite moments that you've had?
I would say that we just have a really awesome team. We have so much fun. We do a lot of really cool events where, even in a virtual world, we'll get together and we'll play games together. We'll do fun kind of, just fun stuff as a team. And I think that because our co-CEOs are, like, the nicest people, it kind of trickles down. And so we have an atmosphere at Manly Bands that is very welcoming, very cohesive. Like, we all work well together. We all have the same kind of common goal, which is to help Manly Bands become successful and be, like, the men's wedding ring company for everyone. So I think all of us really just do whatever we can to be as helpful and kind. And we actually, thank goodness for that, we won Best Places to Work this year, which I would totally agree with. It's a super fun company. And then also we also get to be involved with new product as well. So I work very closely with our products team, and we'll come up with new licenses. Think we have some really, really cool stuff coming up. But for example, our Jack Daniel's whiskey barrel license. And so we get to come up with unique unique materials that never existed before. So we started featuring things that like dinosaur bone and meteorite. And it's just really fun. And so who wants to not sell a product at the happiest point of someone's life? So we feel really lucky that we get to be, you know, part of that for our customers' journeys.
No, absolutely. And from what I've seen in the past few years, you know, you guys have seen tremendous amounts of growth. So I'd imagine that you are probably one of the busiest people I've ever spoken to. Caffeine's got to play some type of role in your life, I assume.
So you would think so, but I'm actually a water drinker. I don't drink coffee, and I was told if I was on coffee to probably, like, stay clear because I have so much energy. No, I just never was a coffee drinker, and it has nothing to do other than just preference. I think it's my mother drank black coffee when I was really little. She had me try it. I never liked the taste, and I just never ended up drinking it. So probably a really good thing for the rest of my team that I'm not on coffee, because you're right. We have grown tremendously this year. It's been a super busy year, and it's only going to continue to get bigger. So,
well, hey, I mean, if you don't need the caffeine, no reason to start drinking it. If you've got the natural energy, then just channel that.
Am I going to get kicked off the show now with no coffee?
Oh, no, absolutely. Some of the best answers are the people who don't drink coffee. We spoke to a gentleman who says he just takes a B12 supplement because, you know, his doctor told him that that's the benefit of the caffeine, you know, without the bad effects. So,
well, I take B12 supplements, so maybe there is truth to that.
Well, there we go. Well, cool. Well, I appreciate you sharing that with us. Now, you know, going back to Manly Bands, right? You guys are known for having a really unique, fun, and funny brand voice and personality, right? You're able to use really great user-generated content from the unboxing of the products. And, you know, when somebody gets it, to your point, right, it's the happiest moment of their life, they're probably going to be inclined to share that with the world. So in what ways in the past year and a half, right, given the context of what's been going on in the world, you know, what are some of the ways your team has had to shift the way that you market, right? Whether it be the channels you use, the methods, et cetera.
Yeah. So it's funny that you say that because way back when the pandemic just started, we had planned the marketing calendar out, I think for like that second quarter of the year for 2020. And I remember saying to my team, and I think they were going to be super mad that I did this, but I said, all the stuff that we planned for the next quarter is going to go away. All of our creative, we are redoing again. We're going to have a completely different approach to the way we are going to talk to our customers. And I remember people thinking, like, why are we doing this? Like, this is all this work that we have. And I kept saying, I'm like, imagine being a bride and groom who is going to get married at this time and then pushing like wedding bands and just ignoring the fact that COVID is existing. And at that point, no one knew anything about COVID, how bad it was, how fast it would spread, or how long it would take for COVID to continue staying with us as a population. So the first thing that we did was, I remember we shifted our marketing strategy and we had a creative that I remember we sat down and talked about it. I said, what would make somebody laugh during a time when there's so much stress? And so we had a really fun ad with a wedding cake, and there was the bride and groom on the top, and we split them apart, and it said, we're all in this together, just 6 feet apart. Because if you remember at the beginning, all they kept talking about was stay 6 feet apart. And we got so many people, it resonated with so many people because they all thought it was funny, because we saw at the time all these like different videos and memes of people like wearing like boxes that are 6 feet and like walking into the crowds. And so I think we were just kind of playing off of like, you know, some of the funny stuff that we had heard in the very beginning of, you know, of the rules that we were hearing during the pandemic time. What's also really funny about that is we tried bringing that back a year later. Just as we said, you know, we haven't run this in a year. I wonder, you know, still COVID still going on. Let's try it. What I've learned is you had to be very careful about your timing, because a year later, tensions were much more high in the country and people did not like the ad. At first, we had so many like, this is hysterical. This is so funny. I love Manly Bands. What a great company. And then it turned into a political thing. So we pulled it down right away. And so I think it just speaks very highly to being very careful about the things that you say and when you say it, because what may be funny today, even 6 months from now may not be. And so I think we changed the tone and we tried to put ourselves in the bride and groom's shoes and said, what is it that they would want to hear? And we realized our tone is typically funny. So we could still be funny, but we also had to be sympathetic. And I think that was the most important thing. And it's not something that we act. We obviously, our team really does care. We want to make sure that every bride and groom, at least if their weddings, you know, didn't go as planned, let's hopefully like have this piece of the puzzle be that much easier for them. And that was kind of our approach in our marketing messages. That was our approach with our, you know, with customer service, because it was stressful for everybody for many different reasons. And for people who were just about to start their lives together, to have it cut short like that, it was very hard. And so we knew that we had to take a step back. We can approach with humor, but we also have to lead with compassion.
Well, it's interesting. What I took out of what you just said is, you know, your team is able to develop this voice because they're staying on top of what's going on in the world, right? They want to be able to play off of the trends and, you know, some of the faux pas going on. But to your point, right, timing is everything. So it seems to me like you put a lot of onus on the customer success team and on the people in your organization that are doing this. How did you go about building up a team like that, right? What did go into that? What was the thought process behind, you know, letting people clap back on social media in the comment section and, you know, stuff like that?
Yes, I'm glad you noticed that. We do have a comedian that does all of our social posts and she's awesome. We thought, you know, what is a comedian going to do during a pandemic when no one was going indoors to see comedy? And so that was kind of our approach. But I think what's really important is, because we have a very omnichannel approach to marketing, we have all these different pieces. We have organic social, we've got paid social, right? And those are different content pieces. We had television, we had podcasts, you know, we had text, Google ads. You know, we have all these different like pieces of the puzzle. We have our customer service experience, the way we message our team, and we have our own brand guidelines. And I think that understanding who your, you know, what what your brand voice is, what your brand voice stands for is important. And as a company, I feel like you have to take a side. You have to have something that you care about. You have to let your personality show. And then everybody kind of comes together and we agree. And we do meetings like this, maybe even like every, you know, 3 months, 6 months, where we just talk about brand voice, because that brand voice changes over time. And so, for example, this week, I think we have another one where we bring anyone together who touches our brand voice, just to make sure that everyone's on the same page, the voice is consistent, and that we all understand the commonality of who this person is and who our brands, you know, what our brand stands for. And we always kind of joke around of who is Manly Bands, who is that person? And it's really like a wingman. We always kind of joke around and say it's like kind of like the groomsman. It's like a wingman, we call them. And it's the person who helps the groom kind of navigate the wedding process and try to lighten the process for them so that they're not so stressed during the process. And so I think the wingman is probably the best way of describing who Manly Bands is, because it shows that we are caring. It shows that we, you know, we're funny, and that, you know, we're always going to be there for our customers no matter what. And that happens even after they get their product. If there's problems, if there's issues, we always hope there's not. But whenever issues arise, we react quickly. So, yeah.
I love that. I absolutely love that. I think that it's super important because, to your point, right, that part of your life is extremely stressful. And so knowing that I can call up the Manly Bands team and say, hey, I'm deciding between these different options. I need some help to understand, you know, what are the unique, you know, values of this type of metal versus another. You just touched on a key thing, right? The importance of omnichannel. And I mean, it's been true for a while that brands need to be, you know, in multiple places in front of their customers where they want to buy and see them. But I think that there's a lot of, you know, things that brands are missing out of in terms of how they strategize this. So, you know, being on multiple channels is different than being on multiple channels with a consistent feel, a consistent voice, a consistent look. I think you touched on this a little bit, but what's at risk for a brand if they really miss out on having that consistent voice across all of their channels?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you do that, you lose who you are as a company. And I think that, you know, when a company, like for example, a lot of people will say they'll have someone manage their social posts and they respond to people. The reason we have this person who responds to people the way they do is because we want to make sure that voice always stays consistent, or people just don't get your brand. And someone who may have heard, I mean, I've literally seen comments on our social posts where someone posts something and then our social media person will respond in the Manly Bands voice and they go, that was so funny, I'm buying because of that. And forget that, like, hey, this is an organic, like, comment. You know, how is it that what's driving the customer? But every interaction they have with you, whether it's through a social post, we know that when someone's buying a wedding band, it's not like, I'm just going to buy it today. We know there's a thought process. We know there's a time where someone goes, okay, I'm getting ready to start looking, and then I actually buy my ring. And during that process, we hit them up in different ways, whether it's through organic social, whether it's through our email, whether it's through remarketing, whatever it is, we want to make sure that voice is consistent, because at any point, someone can drop off through that funnel, and we want to make sure that they see that we are the same person, whether it's through social, whether it's through email, whether it's through our ads. And that consistency is important, because once you lose your voice, who are you as a company? And there may be times where customers may see you just in one place and they don't see you in other locations. Then how are you going to be able to prove yourself as a business? And so whenever we have concepts that we talk about launching, whether it's Black Friday coming up or other things as well, we will literally sit down and have ideation calls, and we'll try to make sure that we understand what's our goal, what are we trying to accomplish with our ads, what are we trying to do? And then we try to come up with an ideation of, like, what does this look like? What does the brand voice look like for this campaign? So it's just, I think it's so important. If you don't do those first steps, it becomes really problematic later.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's critical to build that relationship, right? Which at the end of the day is what's going to bring the customer back to buy from you again.
Correct.
So we talked about content a little bit there, but I want to focus specifically on the marketing content, the ads, the videos, et cetera. How does your team approach repurposing content, right? Because from my understanding, a common best practice in marketing has been you have longer form videos that get spliced up into more bite-sized chunk and that gets used. I guess, can you talk to me a little bit about how your team goes about this? I know you've brought a lot of, like, editing and other capabilities in-house in recent years.
Yeah, we have, for us, the creative is really important. And we know we only have split second to get their attention. And so, when we create content, which is every day, we always try to think about the why. So I think it's important before you start doing content, why are we doing this and what could we possibly use this for? And so there are times where we'll do a video for our YouTube channel And I'll say, you know what, this is really interesting. We should take this splice and put it through TikTok. Or can you build this creative where there's a piece that we can use for another channel, whether it's through Instagram Reels or TikTok channel or whatever it is. But we always try to think about it before we start. And then even after, through discovery, we'll go through assets and go, you know what, this was really good. This performed really well. I wonder how it performed here. And then we can take pieces of it. But it's much easier to know ahead of time how you're going to use content so we get enough footage in the beginning to be able to use it in different areas. And sometimes we'll do it where we don't launch everything at once, where we'll maybe show like our Facebook video today, and then we'll show it on Instagram Reels in like a couple weeks if it's more evergreen. But it's really important to look at the assets you have and see what you can do with them, because there's so much new stuff coming out every day for marketing. Like every week now, I feel like there's like a new beta program for TikTok that we're doing. And so you just never know when you're going to need those assets. So, you know, I think as a company, it's important to have like that digital asset management software to store all your creative so that you can keep it organized, tag things appropriately, and know what you have. Don't, you know, because it does cost, I mean, most companies do not have an in-house creative team. So when they do produce content, it's expensive. And so it's really good to know, like, when I do create this, let's have in mind what we're going to be using it for. Because a video for YouTube is very different than a video for Facebook. And so the formatting really matters. So knowing that and planning that ahead of time to bring that to the team that's directing the video is important for them. What, you know, aspect ratios, making sure things are in view properly so that they can use horizontally, vertically. These are all things you should think about. The other thing that's also important is making sure that you save video, not just getting those final files, but that you have the raw files from any company that you do work with, separating out audio, separating out video, because what happens sometimes is, like, for example, let's say you want to start working and doing international ads, and for some reason your ad video is not resonating with an audience. It could be language, it could be just the voice. So being able to dub out that audio and put new audio in. So just, there's so many different ways that we've cut and pasted and redone and edited our videos to work for different purposes and for testing as well.
So then I think that, you know, they kind of answered my next question. There isn't necessarily a hard and fast rule of, you know, if you make a video, you really should use it no more than this many times. It's really just up to your team to know, where is this going to work? What channels is this going to work with?
I think we have to lead with our analytics. So if our analytics is saying something's performing really well, and it performed really well 2 years ago, doesn't mean it's going to perform well now, but it means we can at least test it again and see how it does. So there is really no rule. I think it depends on the creative. It depends how well it does, whether it's evergreen, whether it's, you know, specifically, you know, time specific. But I think we have to use our best judgment and also know the lifetime of your customer. If you're a product that only sells once, it's okay to use things more often. If you're a product that, you know, that you can sell all the time and they're just, you have a higher lifetime value, then you have to be more careful about reusing content. So I think it just depends on the business as well.
No, that's fair. I'd never really thought about it from that point of view, but that makes a ton of sense. Now, yeah. I'm not familiar with, you know, how long or if your company was, you know, really affected in terms of people working from home for a long period of time. You know, did you guys have to deal with that? Was there any, you know, how did you get past, you know, some of the hiccups in terms of developing content for your team?
Yeah, so that was really tough. So in the very beginning with COVID, we could not create all this new content as easily. We did have photo shoots. I'm not gonna say we didn't. We had a lot of photo shoots that were for TV commercials that we had that we've used. We had people going on set wearing masks and getting COVID tested. This was probably back in like maybe like a couple months after the pandemic hit, or 3 or 4 months after. And so we weren't able to churn out content as quickly as we were. So reusing content at that time was really, really important. Thank goodness things have gotten a little bit better now. But back during the time of, like, in the first year, I think it was a little bit difficult. So we were really relying on our graphic design team to just do amazing creative work. And so it wasn't as much about the video content as it was about the creative. And so a lot of our team, when we started off, Manly Bands used to be a totally remote company when we first started. And they moved into a facility maybe like a year into me working there in Utah. And that's where our company is based out of. And so because most of the marketing team was remote in the beginning, it was very easy to make that transition for us. The products team was a little bit different because we didn't know whether they were going to, like, tell everyone that it was like, we didn't know if there was going to be stay-at-home orders. We didn't know what was going to happen then. Luckily, everything worked out great. But there was a time where our shipping department was split into like three groups and people were shipping from their homes because we didn't know how bad it was or we didn't know what the situation was in the very beginning. But we had our game plan ahead of time. But we did really great because we have an amazing, amazing creative department that produces some unbelievable content for us.
Well, that's great. Well, you know, obviously it was good that you were able to be so flexible and, you know, obviously regardless of how it may have felt in the moment, I'm sure you guys are no worse for the wear.
Thank you. We did okay.
Well, so you talked a few minutes ago about, you know, you're doing these new TikTok beta programs every day, right? I'd like to, yep. to talk to you a little bit about, you know, what are these programs, right? TikTok has massively grown in popularity in the past 2 or 3 years. So talk to us a little bit about these programs. What are they? You know, I'm curious.
Sure. I could talk specifically about the ones that we're currently running. So they have a couple organic programs that we're running right now. One that's kind of like a shopping program where it allows us to have our own little shopping bag in our TikTok account. And when you click on it, you can actually see products and buy products directly from our account. It goes right from there into our Shopify store, and then they can buy from our site. The other thing that's really fun, it's kind of something that reminds me of, like, you know, back in the day when you were doing Instagram pictures and tagging pictures, that's now what we have the capability of doing, but in video form. So now we have the ability to actually tag products that we're featuring in our TikTok videos, and we are seeing purchases, we are seeing conversions. And I think that we're heading in that direction because this is not new to TikTok. It's new to TikTok US, but they're starting to bring some of these things over, giving us the ability to create carousels, giving us the ability to have collection ads. That stuff is all kind of being started now, and it's being tested with about 100 different companies. And it's an integration that we have between TikTok and Shopify. But we're seeing really great success. We even have the ability to like boost our organic posts. So every day we're kind of learning about new programs and getting more involved because we see that we posted, I think, one video and we had like 1,000 followers just from like one video, and it happened so quickly. You could post one video and have 500,000 views within like 2 days. And and the CPMs on TikTok are so much less expensive than they are right now on Facebook or Google. It's just a really great way of getting like branding. And then you can also really, you could spend a lot of time on the ad side, focusing on specific audiences and segmenting them out. So you have like a much cheaper CPM and you're able to reach a specific demographic. It's a win-win. And so we are seeing conversions come through. Right now, we're primarily focused on traffic and building our followers. But eventually we are going to start now promoting and trying to go after conversions as well. But it's a very interesting place to go.
Oh yeah. And I mean, it in the past few years, so many people have been talking about, you know, social selling, you know, scrolling through Instagram, and eventually, you know, it's going to go from seeing a bunch of pictures to seeing a bunch of ads to actually buying, right? So I think this maybe answers the question for us, but, you know, what does this tell you about some of the bigger changes to social media that are coming and, you know, the impact that that's going to have on, you know, an e-commerce marketing strategy in the future?
Well, I mean, we're already seeing it. We're seeing it with Google, for example. Now we can see, we have the ability, not only would we display videos, but we can feature products under our videos. So that's something that we've been kind of working on doing now, is integrating our YouTube videos into products. So we're seeing other social channels are catching up now, and they're starting to give you these type of offerings, because the problem that I think that we have with video is, like, for example, we know, at least with our account, that if we do prospecting with video versus prospecting with, you know, like any kind of still photos, we'll see a higher conversion rate with the still photos in the video. And the main reason is because if you think about it, with the video, you have to watch the video, you have to wait for the video to finish. And then when the video is done, you have to click something else. And so there's what I think they're trying to make it so that there's an easier way for people to purchase when there's a video. And I think that's been the problem that we've seen with Facebook. And I think eventually we'll probably see that start to change, but we have to think about the consumer journey. And we know video works. It works really well. It works well for engagement. It works well for traffic. But when it comes to conversions, you have to make the process seamless, easy, and quick, so it will perform well. And so I think that that's what we're seeing with TikTok. I think that's what we're now seeing with YouTube. And I'm sure that we're going to see it follow with Facebook as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there's something to be said about seeing somebody handle the product physically in real time, right? I mean, Amazon started a couple years ago doing their, you know, what essentially is the shopping channel on Amazon, right? Where you can actually see things being handled. So that totally resonates with me. You know, the last thing that I really wanted to pick your brain on today, I know that you're personally interested in the changes that are going on in consumer data privacy and, you know, all of that mess, right? So with the new iOS that came out, a lot of marketers are talking about it, right? The auto open feature, people being able to opt in versus opt out of, you know, having themselves tracked online. Can you talk to me a little bit about what this actually impacts in either your marketing organization or you know, one more generally?
Yeah, so I mean, there's different iOS updates. The iOS mail update, which is the most recent one, it's still kind of in effect. So we're starting to slowly see it happen. So as a company, what it does on our side is it doesn't allow us to see as a company who's opening emails, like what's a true open, what's not an open. And so what it's going to look like is that everyone's opening their emails. And so now that data doesn't mean anything to us. So the problem I see that's happening, and my biggest concern is on the consumer side, is what they're going to now see. Because if you think about it, if as a company, I'm not able to see whether you've opened something, then to me, an open rate shows interest. Now people who are not interested are going to end up getting emails because we don't know who's interested and who's not interested. So it's just, I mean, it's one of many other markers that we can use, but that's a really big one for us. And I think it's big for a lot of companies. And so what I foresee happening from the business side is our costs end up going up, trying to reach out to more people. And then it's going to end up probably being more problematic on the consumer side, because though they think that the privacy is going to stop them from getting communication, it's only going to end up doing the opposite. So if I start emailing everyone on my list, whether they've opened or not opened or whatever segment that I choose, other companies are going to do the same. And so what that's going to tell me is that on the consumer side, I'm going to get inundated with emails. And so the only way that consumers can do anything about it is to opt out of every single email that they have. And that's obviously not like time, you know, it's not the best use of people's time. So I think that it's going to, I personally think that even though that we know Apple is trying to protect us as consumers and help us with privacy, it's going to only end up dumping it into our email boxes and become a big issue on the consumer side, which I'm assuming, I have to assume Apple knows about this, and I have to assume they have some kind of a game plan after the fact to answer this question. I have no inside information. I wish I did, but I have to believe, like, the company's pretty smart. The people there are very smart. They know what they're doing. But I have to believe that this is a very big disruptor, not only on the email side, but also on the ad side, because I think people forget that behind Facebook, for example, when we had the iOS changes, businesses, and I'm in a lot of different CMO groups, businesses way beyond our company are all feeling the hit of the iOS changes. And not just email, but just Facebook, any kind of ads that they're trying to run are getting basically, you know, we're getting blocked from seeing who's been looking at ads, which then it doesn't allow us to properly remarket to them. And then when you have a business with a longer purchase cycle, it affects them even more. And so it's one, the one concern I was going to say that I have is that I think that there's a lot of small businesses that have been hurt by the iOS changes, and then consumers are doing what they can to say, I don't want to be followed. But every time they click that button, small businesses are suffering. And I think I think they're learning how to get around it now, but it was a very, very tough 4 or 5 months for many different companies. And so that I think that's the dark side behind the light of data protection and privacy.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? I mean, obviously, everybody feels differently about whether they want them to be tracked online. But it seems like it's really a darned if you do, darned if you don't. You know, I want more personalized recommendations, but I also don't necessarily want, you know, my information to be sold and shared and do all that. So, you know, it's really, really hard. Stuck between a rock and a hard place as a business in these days.
Yeah, and it affects the business side and it affects the consumers. And so we do whatever we can to try to make sure that we can be as transparent, you know, with regards to following data privacy laws. And that's something that we are very aware of. We don't sell any of our data for our customers or anything like that. And I think people also have to know, too, that their IP addresses are completely covered. Like, I have no idea when someone comes to our site who they are, what their IP address is. And, you know, so it is private. And so any data that we do get, email addresses or things like that are actually provided to us from the customers.
Right. And so, I mean, I guess my last question is really more asking you to make a prediction, which, you know, sorry if I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here. You know, so with the impact this has that we've talked about, you know, the impact it has on the consumer, that it has on the business, respectively, you know, what can brands do to get around this, right? I mean, email is so critical. You know, I guess what would your advice or recommendation be?
I have two different recommendations, one on the ad side and then one on the email side. So I'll start with the ad side first, because I guess iOS affected both pieces. On the ad side, I would suggest that that companies are empowered by their own data, not rely so heavily on Facebook's data, not rely heavily on the Google Analytics data, because what we're finding is that consumer data, we're losing more and more of it every day. And then what we do get, it's shorter time frames, shorter and shorter and shorter. And so what could have been 30-day durations, now we're getting in 7-day durations or 1-day durations. And so we have to start getting control of our data. And so what we have to do, in my opinion, is take the consumer out of the question totally. Like, stop looking at the consumer data and saying, what is this person doing? Or what are these people doing? I think what we have to start doing is looking at, from a marketing standpoint, the changes that we're making in our marketing budget. Every little thing, whether it's a Facebook change or a specific campaign or specific ad creative or whatever it is, we have to start testing the way we did back in the 90s. We need to start looking at A/B testing. It's the same A/B testing we do on our website. I think we should be doing the same A/B testing with our ads, where we say, hey, let's look at these different geolocations and let's test what happens when this particular instance of Facebook is removed from the equation, or this particular instance of Google, or whatever, you know, whatever it is that you're measuring, and start actually testing what the real incrementality is of all of these different programs that we're running. Because I think by looking at consumers, we are getting clouded information and it's getting cloudier. And so if we take that completely out of the equation and just start running more scientific A/B type tests with all of our programs that we have, all of our marketing programs through Facebook, through Google, even podcast, TV, whatever you can test. I think that we should really look at A/B testing everything that we have, figuring out what our true incrementality is, and continue testing. Because everything is changing so quickly, we can't be static anymore. There was a time where I would look at last click, and I would build out models based off of last click for the year. I feel like those days are kind of over, unless you have testing at your fingertips. And I think that's really, really important. I think that we should put more effort towards testing. On the email side, I think what we should do is we should have two different segments set up for like Safari versus like non-Safari users, to give us an idea of what is really the impact of this iOS mail app. I mean, there's a lot of other ways that you can kind of do it, but I think by creating segments once again and testing them and running the same email side by side to two different audiences based off browser type, it will give us an idea of what's really happening and what the real impact is, to let us know what should our next steps be. So I feel like those are the two strategies that I would use, because I like to lead with scientific data, and it's getting harder and harder to do that. As a marketing person, you're reporting to your presidents, your CEOs, your head of departments, and they want to know, what are we going to be able to do this month? What can we do next month? What can we do next quarter? And we have to be, as marketers, predictable. And if we can't be predictable, then what are we doing? And so I think that's the only way that it's going to give us the ability to have some of that control back, is to really run tests as many as we can. And whether you need some kind of a software tool, whether you have an in-house data analyst, someone to really help you, so that you can, once again, be more predictable and hit the revenue targets and spend targets that you need to hit.
Obviously data has always been important to marketing, right? I think that that's not untrue, but it's interesting how many more metrics and data points and things marketers these days actually need to track. And I think, you know, maybe you'll agree or disagree, but that's why a lot of organizations are bringing in growth marketers, right? People who can do these things that we're talking about and figure out, okay, how can we actually scale this business, right? How can we keep the brand voice that they have, but still make them go from $5 million to $100 million?
Yeah. And I think the problem is, I think everybody wants instantaneous results. The reason I personally love growth marketers and growth marketing in general is because it's a slow process of little changes along the way that add up to a bigger picture. And so, you know, I remember someone said to me, you know, do we want to test free shipping versus free second day shipping? If we do free second day shipping, it's going to end up costing us this much. And I go, okay, but if we don't do it and we've tested it, this is how much we're going to lose in revenue, you know? And so it allows us to make decisions now as to not only like what our ads are showing, but what's also on our website, how do we display things and the decisions that we make. So I think what we have to do as marketers is take our opinions out of the equation and start thinking about okay, if we do this one little test, what are we going to see? What's the engagement change going to be? And due to that engagement, what do we think we're going to see from a conversion standpoint? And really start backing in the numbers. And you can see, I mean, you can end up getting like $500,000, $1 million, $10 million growth, depending on the company size, just from running A/B tests alone. And so that's why I also agree. I think growth marketing is huge, and it allows us to finally get some of that control back and be more analytical about the decisions that we're making versus making assumptions, which can be really troubling in a time where iOS has really crippled a lot of businesses.
Nope, absolutely. I think we can sum that up to lead with the data and come from a place of, you know, learning or exploration.
Correct.
I love that. Well, Stephanie, this has been a great conversation. I really, really appreciate you joining me. So I guess, you know, where can our listeners go if they're looking in the market for a new wedding band, or, you know, they want to talk to you about consumer data or marketing?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn. So if anybody wants to find me on LinkedIn, you could look up to Stephanie Bregman, and you should be able to find me there. And then with regards to buying a wedding band, I would go to manlybands.com. And feel free, you can always reach out to me as well. But yeah, no, I wish everybody good luck. And if you are in that wedding process, it's easy. You'll get through it. And congrats to you.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks, Stephanie. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your day.
That's it for this episode of E-commerce with Coffee, powered by Amber Engine. If you haven't gotten your fix yet, be sure to get more e-commerce brand secrets on our website at amberengine.com. And don't forget to subscribe for more episodes.